Ah, you're here. Good.
A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death.
Lights out, everybody.
Welcome to the Old Time Radio Cast, where we take the most terrifying tales from the golden age of radio, clean them up, and remaster them for your listening pleasure, truly preserving the very best era of audio entertainment with stories of suspense, mystery, and horror. This week we bring you two tales from the Crime Club. Our rather macabre librarian invites us over to hear stories of murder and mystery, which were published and released in print by Doubleday Publishing. Listen now to Death Swims at Midnight from August 28, 1947, followed by Sometimes the Sucker Wins from September 4th, 1947. Enjoy.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Death Swims at Midnight. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Death Swims at Midnight. The very exciting story of a singular beach where the tide goes out and murder comes in. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. Bill Desmond, the famous private detective, and his pint-sized assistant, Maxie Davis, have gone to the resort town of Marbell for a rest. To Maxie's disgust, Bill has dragged him out of bed at 7 a.m. to go for a swim. As they stand at the edge of the boardwalk, looking out over the ocean, Maxie blinks his sleepy eyes and then turns to glare at his boss.
You mean you expect me to go in there?
Why, sure, Maxie. A swim before breakfast is good for the health.
For a fish, yeah. Me, I should have stood in bed.
Oh, you'll change your mind when you hit that water. Aye, look at how blue it is. How calm.
Mm-hmm. And who knows how cold.
I do, gentlemen.
What?
I do. Yep, the water's cold. Cold as death.
Excuse me, but...
Kind of scared you, eh? Well, didn't mean to. Name's Atkins. Fuzzy Atkins, they call me. I live in that shack on the old fishing pier.
I see.
Weren't thinking of doing some fishing, were you?
I know, not this morning.
Too bad. Ain't many goes fishing these days. Nope, they got other things to do.
Well, yes. Excuse us, Fuzzy, we are going for a swim.
Go right ahead. But don't forget, the water's cold these days. Very cold.
Encouraging little fellow, isn't he, Maxie?
Yeah, look, Bill, maybe he's right. The water does look kind of chilly. Let's go back to our hotel.
Oh, nonsense. We're going for a swim. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get down these stairs to the beach.
Uh-huh. I still don't see why we couldn't have come down here later. At least we would have had company.
We have company, Maxie.
Where?
Over there. That girl.
Oh.
Ah. She looks rather interesting, doesn't she?
She looks like a dame.
There are dames, Maxie, and dames.
Yeah, and there's trouble and more trouble. Come on, Bill, let's head for the other end of the beach.
And pass that up? Not me. Come on, let's visit.
But, Bill, okay. Say, what's she doing, digging in the sand?
I don't know. She looks rather old to be making mud pies. Hello.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry if I startled you. Well, how's the water this morning?
It's okay, I guess.
Nice beach you have here.
Getting kind of crowded.
Is it? I didn't notice.
That's funny. Those eyes of yours have been noticing everything else.
Well, there's nothing like exercise for the eyes, I always say.
Just be careful they don't get too much. I hear that makes them turn black.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Just to give them a rest, I'm going to get out of here. So long.
That's the neatest brush off you ever get.
Too bad, too. I've always wanted to teach a guy like that how to swim.
Something tells me she don't need no lessons.
Maybe not. Well, let's get to the water, eh?
It's kind of nice here on the sand, Bill. What do you say we squat here for a while?
Yeah, all right. Watch where you sit down, Maxie.
Huh?
There's quite a bit of tar on the beach.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's a nice spot. Guess I'll just... Hey!
What's the matter, Maxie?
What's the matter? What's the idea of putting your foot under me?
Put my foot under you? Not me.
Oh, cut it out, will you, Bill? Who do you think you're kidding?
But on the level, I swear I didn't.
Well, that's funny. Wait a minute. Maybe there's something... Hey! It wasn't your foot. It's someone else's.
What? Yeah, let me see. Maxie, there's someone under the sand. Quick, help me shovel it to one side.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know just where, but if the feet are down here, I think... Ah. Here we are.
Holy smoke! It's a dame. Is she sleeping?
Yes. The long, long sleep of death. Did you phone the coroner, Maxie?
Yeah, Bill, he'll be right down.
Good.
Say, Bill, have you figured out what caused the death?
Well, there's a nasty bruise on her head, but I'd say she drowned.
Drowned? But how did she get under the sand?
The how, Maxie, is not so important as the why.
Howdy. Howdy, gentlemen. Noticed you digging from up on the pier. Ain't after clams, are you?
Not exactly, Fuzzy. Yeah. Take a look at what we dug up.
Oh. You know, I ain't seen a clam like that for a long time. No, sirree. Not like that.
Yeah, come on, let's stop that.
Huh?
Who is this girl?
Appears to me like Mrs. Dale. Joan Dale. Yep, that's who it is. She's got the big bungalow right opposite my shack on the pier.
I see. Fuzzy, did you see that girl who was on the beach when we got here?
Yep, sure did. That was Carol Carson. Got the bungalow on t'other side of Mrs. Dale. She left you in a hurry, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Hey, you don't think that Carson
dame
was...
I don't think anything yet, Maxie. Fuzzy, we expect the coroner here any minute. Will you watch the body until he arrives?
Yep, sure will.
Good. Come on, Maxie. I want to have a look at Mrs. Dale's bungalow.
Hey, this is quite a layout, huh, Bill?
Yes, Maxie, it's quite cozy.
Cozy is right. With a joint like this, even I could learn how to like the beach. What are you looking for?
I don't know. We'll just poke around, see what we can. Ah.
What is it?
This desk, Maxie.
Well, what about it? I don't see a thing.
Take a look at the blotter.
So I'm looking. All I see is a lot of numbers.
Exactly. It's almost as though someone has been practicing arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are no papers on the desk. None in the drawers and... Yeah, let me see. No. Nothing in the waste paper basket either. Maybe...
Where are you going?
Over the fireplace. Uh-huh.
You find anything, Bill?
Yes. Ashes, Maxie. Ashes. But not only of paper, of cloth, too.
Cloth?
Uh-huh. And to judge by some of the burnt threads, a coarse cloth.
Hello? That you, Martin? I want to talk to you, but... Well, who are you?
My name is Desmond, Bill Desmond. This is my assistant, Maxie Davis.
Oh, you're the ones who discovered the body, aren't you?
Yes. How'd you know?
I've just left the coroner.
Oh, I see.
I beg your pardon, but the name Desmond is rather familiar.
Familiar, he says. Brother, you're looking at the best private op in the business.
Oh, of course. Oh, permit me to introduce myself. I'm Fulton Stokes, Mrs. Dale's attorney.
Oh, yes. How do you do? Mr. Stokes, when you left the coroner, had he completed his examination of the body?
Yes. He's of the opinion that Mrs. Dale drowned at some time around midnight last night. He thinks it was an accident.
Oh?
You disagree?
Well, I don't know. Yet. Tell me, who is this Martin you called to when you first came in?
Martin Dale, Joan's husband.
Do you know where he is?
Probably on his cruiser, which is anchored just offshore.
Didn't he live here with his wife?
Well, no. You see, they'd had a bad quarrel. Joan had the idea that Martin married her for her money.
I see. Do you know when they last saw each other?
Not exactly, but she did have an appointment to see him on board his cruiser late last night.
Late last night, eh? Maxie?
Yeah?
I think we'll take a little boat ride. All right, Maxie. Here's Dale's cruiser. Get on board and I'll follow.
Okay.
Up you go.
Okay, I'm on.
Now, give me a hand.
That's it.
Thanks.
Hey, what do you two think you're doing? Get off or I'll throw you out.
Sure. Come on, Bill.
No, Max, you don't mind Mr. Dale. He's just kidding.
Kidding, huh? Okay, wise guy. You ask for it, I'll just...
Gee, he didn't last long, did he?
No, Maxie. The trouble with him is he's big, but he's soft. Aren't you, Dale? Come on, now, come on, up on your feet.
Well, what do you want?
I've got some bad news, Dale. Your wife is dead.
Dead?
Yes. She was drowned late last night. Tell me, when did you see her last?
A couple of days ago.
You're lying, Dale.
Lying? Why, I ought to...
What?
Nothing.
That's better. Your wife was aboard this boat late last night, wasn't she?
Yes, I talked to her about a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't in the mood. She'd lost a lot of money gambling with Nick Vero.
Nick Vero? Who's he?
Well, he runs the Pelican Club at the end of the boardwalk.
Oh. Well, go on.
I tried to convince my wife to let me come back. She wouldn't listen.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to kiss her. She struggled, then jumped off the boat and swam for shore. That's all I know.
That's all, eh? She had an ugly bruise on her head, Dale.
I don't know anything about it.
Maybe not. By the way, where can I get in touch with Nick Vero?
Well, from 8 p.m. on, you can find him at his club. Before that, he's usually with his girlfriend, Carol Carson.
Carol Carson?
Carson?
Why, yes, do you know her?
Yeah, you might say she was a passing acquaintance, huh, Bill?
Uh-huh. You know, Maxie, I think I'll pay her a visit this evening. Maybe we can get to be warm friends.
Nice view from the boardwalk, huh, Stokes?
Hmm? Oh, Martin. What's wrong with your jaw?
I had a visitor on my boat. A man by the name of Desmond. Kind of funny his knowing that Joan had an appointment with me last night.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Martin. Joan's death occurred under peculiar circumstances. Desmond asked me some questions, and I answered them.
Uh-huh. I got a couple of questions, too.
Yeah?
As far as I know, the will Joan made after our marriage has never been changed. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Now, according to the terms of that will, I inherit her estate.
Go on.
I'm a little short right now. I've been running into some bad luck at Nick Vero's. How about an advance? Well?
How much do you need?
$5,000.
Well, I guess I can let you have it.
Good.
Just one thing, Martin.
Yeah?
If Joan was murdered, you'd be the leading suspect.
So?
Now, I'm not saying that you're guilty. But if you were tried and convicted, you wouldn't inherit a penny. I'd be out $5,000.
Why, I'm surprised at you for bringing that up. After all, you'd only be out $5,000. As for me, I'd be out.
Hello?
Hello, Nick?
Yeah?
This is Martin Dale.
Oh. Been waiting for you to get in touch. Got that dough you owe me?
Well, I've got $5,000, Nick.
$5,000? Told me you'd have it all by tonight.
I know, but now that Joan's dead, I'll need a little more time.
Sorry, Dale, your time's up tonight. Either you pay off or else they'll shovel you in with your wife.
But if you'll only wait, I'll...
No, I've waited long enough.
Now, look, Nick, give me a break and I'll tell you something you should know. Okay?
I'm not making any promises, Dale, but spill it.
Well, there's a private detective from here, from New York. A fellow by the name of Bill Desmond.
That's not news.
I know, but he was out on my boat this morning, and from what he said, I think he's got something on Carol.
Huh?
He said that he was going to see her this evening.
Oh.
Well, Nick, do I get more time?
Okay, Dale. If this tip turns out to be on the level, you can forget about tonight's deadline.
Getting kind of late, Nick. Aren't you going up the clock?
What's the matter, Carol? Are you anxious to get rid of me?
Of course not. Hey, what's wrong with you tonight?
Nothing. Why?
Well, you've been thoughtful all evening.
So? I've been thoughtful.
You're not usually when you're with me.
So?
I was just wondering if you were thinking of Joan Dale.
Why should I be thinking of her?
Oh, come on, Nick. You don't have to be cagey with me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I saw you go into her bungalow last night.
You know, you're way off base, baby.
Now, look, Nick, I'm sort of mixed up in this thing, too, and I figured that...
You expecting anyone, Carol?
No.
Okay, give me a minute to duck into the bedroom, then go see who it is.
Right. Just a minute.
Good evening.
Oh, the boy with the athletic eyes.
Yes, Desmond's the name. Bill to you.
Well, good night, Bill.
Just a moment, Carol. Don't close the door till I'm inside. There we are.
You get out of here.
Oh, not yet, darling. Nice place you've got here. You know, I'm beginning to think that your friend Nick Vera's a fool.
What do you mean?
Well, a setup like this, a girl like you, I'd be hanged if I desert you every night just for business.
If you don't mind, let's leave Nick out of this.
Suits me. As a matter of fact, I picked my time in coming to visit you to be sure I'd avoid running into him.
I see.
I figured we'd be more comfortable alone.
What do you want?
Don't. I didn't do anything.
I know, but I didn't like the way your hands were twitching.
Oh, that. That's nothing. I guess I smoke too much.
Yes, I guess you do. Suppose you cool off and tell me why you came here.
Okay. Tell me, why did you bury Joan Dale's body in the sand?
I didn't.
Did it have anything to do with Nick Vero?
Well, don't stare
like that. Talk, I said...
You shouldn't have hit him so hard, Nick.
Shut up.
But you shouldn't have hit him that way.
Said shut up.
That's the first time you ever hit me.
Yeah. It won't be the last time if you don't shut your trap. Help me tie this lug up. I'm going to feed him to the fishes.
Yep, what is it?
I've been looking high and low for my boss, Bill Desmond. Have you seen him?
Nope, ain't seen hide nor hair of him. Maybe he's gallivanting.
Wait a minute, Fuzzy. I thought I heard something.
What? I didn't hear anything.
There it is again.
Hey, you're right. Someone's crying for help. Sounds like it comes from under my pier. Come on.
Okay.
This way, under the boardwalk.
Help.
Sounds like it comes from right over there. Wait. I put on my flashlight. There we are.
Holy Hannah! It's Bill!
Yep, so it is. Crushed up like a bundle of wash. And the tide coming in, too.
Help.
It's okay now, Bill.
Maxie?
Yeah, and Fuzzy Atkins.
I'll have you loosen. Just a second, Mr. Desmond. Just have to cut one more cord.
There we are. Can you get up, Bill?
Yes, I think so. Just give me your hand for a moment. Thanks.
Gee, I'm sure glad you're okay, Bill. Lucky Fuzzy and me heard you. Otherwise, you'd have been a goner.
Yep. The old devil in the sea might have gotten another one.
The old devil, Fuzzy?
Sure. Didn't believe in him much till I saw him get Mrs. Dale.
You saw a devil get Mrs. Dale?
Yep, sure did. I was up in my shack and I saw... Oh!
Bill, you okay?
Yes, Maxie. But Fuzzy's been hit.
Is he hurt bad?
He's dead, Maxie.
Dead. Who do you think killed him?
A devil, Maxie. A devil.
Boy, what a layout this Pelican Club has. Look at all the suckers just begging to be taken to the cleaners.
Yeah.
Did you see Nick, Bill?
No, Maxie. Let's try his private office.
Right. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. Better stand guard outside the door, Maxie. I don't want to be disturbed.
Okay.
Say, who do you think... Bill Desmond.
Yes, Carol, what's the matter? You act as though you're looking at a ghost. Keep both hands on top of the table, darling.
Oh, you got me wrong, Bill. I wasn't going to pull a gun.
Maybe not. But suppose you come around here, away from the desk.
Okay.
That's better. I suppose it must have handed you quite a laugh when Nick crept up behind me and let me have it.
I didn't laugh, Bill.
No? After he threw me under the pier, you might at least have gotten in touch with Maxie.
No, I couldn't. Nick made me stick close to him just a little while ago. As soon as he left, I called your hotel, but Maxie was out.
Mm-hmm. You're fast on your feet, aren't you?
You don't believe me?
What do I look like, little boy Blue?
It's the truth, Bill, honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, never mind that now. Where'd Nick go?
I don't know.
Now, look, Carol. I've got a bump on my head the size of an egg. My wrists and ankles are raw from the ropes cutting into them. I'm in no mood for stalling around.
I'm afraid. Nick will kill me.
Well, now, don't worry. I won't tell him how I found out. Well?
He went to see Stokes at his hotel, the Shore Plaza.
Honest?
Yes.
Okay, sweetheart, I'll buy it. For your sake, I hope this isn't another sellout.
You really expect to find Nick here, Bill?
I don't know, Maxie.
You don't know? Well, I do. I'll bet you that...
Yes? Oh, it's you, Desmond, and Mr. Davis.
Yes, Stokes. Tell me, is Nick Vera with you?
Nick? Why, no.
I told you, Bill. I knew she was lying.
Go ahead, Maxie.
Okay.
Do you mind if we come in for a few minutes, Stokes?
Well, I'm sorry, Desmond, but I'm rather busy.
Sorry, too. I want in.
Now that you're in, what do you want?
Well, Nick Vera. Shame on you. A big boy like you hiding behind the door. No wonder Stokes was so nervous. That gun of yours is almost as ugly looking as you.
Close your big yap, Desmond, or I'll fill your teeth with lead. Until this half-pint sidekick of yours to close that door.
Do as he says, Maxie.
Sure.
That's better. Now, what did you want, Desmond?
Oh, I want to talk to you about a number of things. For instance, why you cocked me earlier this evening and left me under the pier for fish bait.
Me? You're nuts.
Oh, I don't think so, Nick. Tell me, did you really want me to end up like Mrs. Dale?
Look, Desmond, if you think I killed Mrs. Dale, you're off your trolley.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Carol Carson thought you might have had something to do with it. That's why she buried the body in the sand.
Carol acts like a dumb little twist sometimes. For instance, she shouldn't have told you I was here.
She didn't.
Maybe not. Well, Desmond, anything else you'd like to ask me before I go?
No, Nick. But if I think of something, I'll call on you.
Yeah, do that. I'll give you a warm reception. Okay, you guys, just stay where you are. I'm leaving.
Should we follow him, Bill?
No, Maxie. I put Clay right into his hands. Stokes.
Yes, Desmond?
What did Nick want with you?
Well, he came to see me about Mrs. Dale's gambling debt. It seems that she owed him about $50,000.
As much as that, eh?
That's what he says. Now that she's dead and he can't collect it legally, he wanted me to pay it out of her estate.
What did you tell him?
Well, naturally, I told him that was impossible. He didn't like that.
I guess not.
He told me I'd have to pay up or else he'd kill me.
What's the matter with you, Bill? Ever since we returned to our rooms, you've been pacing up and down like a stir bug. I thought you said you were going to undress and hit the hay.
Yes, I know, Maxie, but I can't get this case out of my mind. The solution keeps eluding me.
It does? Well, I think it's a cinch.
Oh, you do, eh?
Sure, look. Mrs. Dale probably drowned swimming in from her husband's boat.
How about Fuzzy Atkins?
Well, Nick was sore because Fuzzy helped pull you out of the water.
Ah, no, Maxie, that won't wash.
But who else could have killed him? That old devil in the sea he was babbling about?
That old devil in the sea. Wait.
Maybe Fuzzy wasn't babbling.
Huh?
Yes. It could tie in with those ashes we found in Mrs. Dale's fireplace. Why, of course.
Of course what?
Maybe. Oh, see who it is, Maxie.
Okay.
Bill in, Maxie.
Oh, Miss Carson.
Who's that? Carol?
Yes, Bill. I've got to talk to you.
Good Lord, what's happened? You look as though you've been through a meat grinder.
Nick gave me a beating.
Why, the dirty...
He was sore because I told you he'd gone to Stokes. Well, I'm going to give him lots more to be sore about.
Yes?
Nick was in Joan Dale's bungalow last night. I don't know if he saw her, but he took some of her papers.
How do you know?
I saw her name on the envelope just before he put them in his desk.
I see. Come on, Maxie. I want to take a peek into that desk.
How are you making out, Bill?
I think we'll be in Nick's office presently, Maxie. Unless I've lost all my skill with a skeleton key. There! That does it. Now, careful, Maxie, when you close the door.
Okay.
Now, the flashlight. That's it. Uh-huh. There's the desk. Hold the light on the top center drawer.
Right.
That's it. This should be easy to force in the door. I'll just insert this near the lock and press down. Ah, that did it. Now to see what...
Hey, someone put the lights on.
Yeah, I did. Well, you looking for something, Desmond?
Well, if it isn't our gentle friend, Nick, and his friend, the automatic.
Yeah, this gun and me are good pals. It always does what I want. Desmond, I told you I'd give you a warm reception. Well, here it is.
That, Mr. Stokes, is what I call an entrance. Thanks.
Not at all, Desmond. Glad to be of service.
How is Nick, Maxie?
I think he's going to make some undertaker very happy.
Well, I don't think anyone will miss him. Now, let's see what's in that desk drawer. Ah, yes. There's Mrs. Dale's papers, all right.
May I have them, Desmond, as her executive? I'll need them to wind up her estate.
Certainly. Oh, by the way, may I have that gun? I'll turn it into the coroner, explain what happened.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Thanks. Now, would you mind taking off your shoes and socks?
What?
What's the matter with you, Bill? You're nuts?
No, Maxie. I just want to prove that Mr. Stokes is guilty of murder. Hey, what time is it, Maxie?
7 a.m. Hey, what's the idea of setting the alarm clock?
I've got a date at the beach with Carol Carson. Where the devil are my swim trunks?
Wait a minute. I didn't get a chance to talk to you last night. Why did Stokes commit those murders?
Well, he'd embezzled a good deal of Mrs. Dale's money. She'd been checking her accounts and discovered the discrepancies. That's why her desk blotter was full of figures.
Oh, but how did he drown her in the ocean?
He didn't. That is, in the ocean. He drowned her in her bathtub after first knocking her unconscious.
Uh-huh.
Then he carried her under the boardwalk and the old fishing pier.
I see. So Stokes was really the old devil of the sea that Fuzzy saw.
Exactly. Now, where in blazes are those swim trunks?
But how about Nick?
Oh, Nick. Well, when he was in Mrs. Dale's bungalow, he came across her papers with notations on Stokes' embezzlement. Mm-hmm. Then he went after Stokes, not for Mrs. Dale's gambling debt, but for blackmail.
Oh, I get it. Now, one thing more, Bill. Why did you want Stokes to take off his shoes and socks?
Well, if you remember, the beach was covered with spots of tar.
Uh-huh.
When Stokes carried Mrs. Dale into the pier in the dark, he got tar all over his feet and legs. And that stuff is almost impossible to get off.
Oh.
When he got back to her bungalow, he tried cleaning it off with a towel. Then he burned the towel in the fireplace.
I see.
Now, if you'll excuse me, Maxie, I'll be off to meet Carol.
Bill.
Now what?
Before you go, don't you think you ought to put on your swim trunks?
And so closes tonight's story, Death Swims at Midnight. James Ertine wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Arthur Vinton played the part of Bill Desmond. Murray Forbes was Maxie Davis. Elspeth Eric was Carol Carson. Ralph Camargo was heard as Fulton Stokes. Chuck Webster was Nick Verrill. Joe Latham played Fuzzy Atkins. And Barry Thompson was Martin Dale. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. This is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very absorbing story of a girl who was forced into a game of terror in which the dice were loaded with death. It's called Sometimes a Sucker Wins. In the meantime, there's a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we look for you next week.
This program came from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Sometimes a sucker wins. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Sometimes a Sucker Wins. The very exciting story of a girl who finds the key to her brother's disappearance and opens the door to murder. Let's take a look at it under the reading lamp. When Joan Adams arrived in the city, she felt uneasy, apprehensive. But the thought of turning back never occurred to her. She had a job to do, one that would require courage and patience. As soon as she'd obtained a room, she phoned District Attorney Nelson.
District Attorney Nelson was a busy man. At least that's what his secretary told me every time I phoned. But I kept calling, and finally she gave me an appointment. When I arrived there, Nelson made me wait almost an hour. Then his secretary ushered me into his office. For a few minutes, he pretended to be busy with the papers on his desk. Then he looked up at me.
Now, Miss Adams, what did you want to see me about?
My brother, Larry.
Oh, you read the papers, didn't you?
Yes, I read them.
Well?
The story they printed is a lie.
I'm sorry, Miss Adams. I'm afraid I disagree with you.
Look, Mr. Nelson, I've come all the way down here from Hillsborough because I think my brother is dead. I believe he was murdered.
I see. And what makes you so sure he was murdered?
I just know it, that's all.
Oh, the feminine intuition test, eh?
No, it's much more than that. I knew my brother better than anyone else in the world. He would never run away from anything. And he would never steal.
No? Look, Miss Adams, your brother was my assistant in charge of an investigation into the building racket. Certain important files were in his care. One day, without a word to anyone, he disappears with the files and with every dollar he has in the bank. Doesn't that sound like a payoff to you?
No, Larry couldn't be bribed. He just couldn't.
I wish I could share your faith in your brother, Miss Adams, but I'm afraid the facts speak for themselves.
Well, then, you won't help me?
Help you? I should say not. Due to your brother's malfeasance, the integrity of this office has been impugned.
I see. And if you get involved with me, it might hurt your chances for political advancement.
How dare you insinuate such a thing? I'm here to represent the citizens of this city. The only
thought that... Oh, why don't you stop? What? Save that bilge for your campaign speeches.
Why, I... Young lady, please leave this office. At once.
Don't worry, I'm leaving. But let me tell you this. I'm going to clear my brother's name if it's the last thing I do. When I walked out of the building, I turned right and went to the corner to get a bus back to my room. As I stood there, I noticed a green coupe parked behind the bus sign. There was a man at the wheel. As I looked in his direction, he pulled his hat brim low over his eyes and slouched down in his seat. Then the bus came along. I got in, sat down in the rear. After we started, I happened to glance out the rear window. I saw that green coupe pull slowly away from the curb. Just when I began to feel sure I was being followed, the coupe turned off the avenue on which we were traveling. When the bus stopped at my corner, I got off and began walking across the street to my rooming house. I was about halfway over when I heard the motor. I looked around just in time to see the car.
Are you all right, miss?
Yes, I guess so.
Gee, that sure was a close shave.
Yeah, sure was. I told myself it was an accident. But the car that almost ran me down was a green coupe. When I got up to my room, I was frightened and discouraged. I had only one clue. A month before, in a gossip column syndicated in the Hillsborough paper, Larry had been linked with Roxy Haver, the burlesque queen. When I'd written him about it, he'd laughed it off. I looked up Roxy Haver's number in the directory, and then I called her.
Hello?
Hello, Miss Haver?
Yeah.
This is Joan Adams.
Who?
Joan Adams, Larry's sister. You remember my brother, don't you?
Well, yeah. I guess everybody does.
But I mean, you knew him.
Me? Whatever gave you that idea?
Well, I read about it in Guy Gilmore's column, you know, about a month ago.
Oh, that. That was just some publicity dreamed up by my press agent.
But Larry wrote me it was true.
Now, look, honey, maybe he did, but he was just stringing you. If I had a buck for every guy who claimed he went out with me, I'd have picked up more dough than Stymie.
I know,
sorry,
but...
honey, I gotta hang up now.
Wait.
Yeah?
Miss Haver, you're the only lead I have. I've got to see you.
Huh?
I'm coming down to your hotel right now.
Your what? Say, don't you understand English? I told you, I never knew your brother.
I said I'm coming right down.
Wait a minute, I'll see you. You know where the Market Street subway station is, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, I'll meet you there in half an hour. I'll be near the newsstand at the rear of the platform.
Right. Goodbye. Miss Haver?
Yeah, keep your voice down, kid, and face the tracks.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I just want to keep my nose clean, that's all. Now, what do you want?
You did know Larry, didn't you?
Yeah, he went out with me a couple of times.
Why?
Huh?
Oh, no, please don't misunderstand. You see, I know Larry didn't like making the rounds, nightclubs and things like that. He was on a job, wasn't he?
Search me. All he told me was that he liked my company.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Then why did you deny knowing him?
Look, honey, I gotta watch my steps, see? Publicity's okay, but not in a caper like this.
Oh. I don't know. I was... so sure you could help me.
Uh-huh, I understand. Listen, honey, I'm going to give you a good tip. Go on home and forget about this mess.
It's easy for you to say. He wasn't your brother.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going to keep digging till I get the truth.
Okay, honey, do what you want. Only don't call me, and whatever you do, don't come near my hotel. So long, kid.
I watched Roxy go up the subway steps. I turned and walked to the front of the platform to wait for a train.
All right, everybody, take it easy. Keep back, will you?
The platform was crowded and everyone surged forward. Then just when the train was coming into the station, someone in the rear pushed me.
Hey, what's the matter with you, miss? You trying to get yourself killed?
Someone pushed me.
Huh? Who?
I don't know.
You don't know, eh? If you ask me, I think you were trying to jump, but you lost your nerve.
Trying to... Oh, you're crazy.
Not me, sister. Now, come on, beat it before I call the cop. Come on, get going.
That subway guard didn't know it, but he'd given me an idea. I went down to police headquarters. When I told the desk sergeant my name, he sent me in to a Lieutenant Calvin. Calvin listened to my story in silence. His eyes were cold, skeptical.
That's quite a story, Miss Adams.
But it's true, every word of it.
I'm not saying it isn't. But even assuming the facts, there's the possibility that both incidents were accidental.
No, but I tell you, they couldn't have been accidents. Someone is trying to prevent me from finding out what really happened to my brother.
I know what happened to him.
You do?
Yeah. You see, you were sent to me because I'm in charge of the Larry Adams case. Your brother was paid off, and now he's hiding out.
You too, huh?
Yeah. Me too. I'm convinced of it.
Of course. You couldn't possibly be wrong, could you?
No. Miss Adams, I'll let you in on a little secret. Reports in that your brother's been seen in Mexico.
I don't believe it. If Larry were alive, he'd communicate with me in some way.
Not if he were wanted.
I tell you, he would.
Have it your own way. You know, Miss Adams, you've been annoying quite a few officials by poking around in this matter. I thought I'd put you wise so you wouldn't waste your time.
I'm not wasting my time. I'm determined to clear my brother's name.
Maybe so. But if you're smart, you'll catch the next train home.
That sounds like a warning, Lieutenant.
It is. You see, I'd hate to see a pretty girl like you get hurt.
After seeing Lieutenant Calvin, I was more determined than ever to vindicate my brother. Calvin had done nothing to encourage me, except in one way. I was annoying people with my poking around. Perhaps I'd annoy the right person. A few days later, I got a telephone call. Hello?
Hello, is this Joan Adams?
Yes. Who is this?
Never mind. I understand you want to know something about your brother.
Yes?
I know something, baby. Hello, you still there?
Yes, I'm here. It's just that what did you want to tell me?
Not so fast, baby. I don't talk on the phone.
Oh, well, where can I see you?
There's a little place called the Blue Swan at South and Main. Meet me there tonight at 7:30. I know what you look like. Just sit in a booth and wait, okay?
Yes.
Just one little thing. I don't want any other company.
What do you mean?
Don't invite any cops. I don't like them.
Don't worry. Neither do I.
Good. Okay, see you tonight.
Hello, Miss Adams.
Oh.
What's the matter, baby?
Nothing. I didn't see you come in.
Oh? I was in the back watching you. Come alone?
Yes.
I hope so. I thought I saw a guy hanging around outside.
I swear I haven't spoken to the police.
Yeah. You know, with those big blue eyes of yours, you could make me believe anything.
Shall we talk?
Okay. The name's Griffo.
Griffo?
Yeah. Don't mean nothing to you, huh? Ever hear of Augie Strecker?
I think so. I've seen his name mentioned in the papers.
Uh-huh. Every time something happens that ain't kosher, the papers like to hint maybe Augie has something to do with it. You know what? He has.
Did he have anything to do with my brother's disappearance?
Oh, that's asking a lot, baby. You see, I work for Augie.
Oh.
But don't get me wrong. Sometimes when you work, you ain't satisfied with your pay.
I see. Well, I have some money, not much, but maybe I could...
Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
You sure you didn't tip off the cops?
Yes, why?
I thought I saw that guy again through the window.
I don't see anybody.
Well, maybe not, baby. You know, talking to you ain't exactly healthy for a lot of reasons. I don't like it here.
Where can we go?
I don't know. We can't go to my place. I live at one of Augie's hotels. Cops keeping tab on you where you live?
I don't think so, but...
But what?
Nothing. I want to hear about my brother.
Okay. Pick up my car outside. Let's go over to your place.
All right. We got into Griffo's car and started off. He didn't say anything, just drove rapidly, doubling on our tracks until at last we reached my rooming house. Griffo was silent till the door of my room closed behind me.
Yeah. Now maybe we'll be alone.
What are you looking for?
Just checking to see that you haven't planted a listening device or two.
Well?
Okay, you're clean. Mind if I sit on this sofa with you?
No.
Thanks. I'll just put this heater on the coffee table. You know, just in case.
Do you always carry a gun?
Yeah, it comes in handy. Well, let's talk. You were saying that you haven't got much dough.
No, I haven't. Just about $800.
That all?
Yes, but maybe I could raise some more.
How much?
I don't know. I'd have to have time.
That's not so good. Anybody ever tell you you're a looker?
No.
Cut it out. You don't have to play cute with me. Come here.
Oh, please.
You know, baby, money ain't everything. Now, maybe we can work this
out. Don't. Please, I'll get the money.
Forget the dough. Now, come on, baby. You don't want to play hard to get, do
I
you?
I said don't.
All right. Give me that gun. Give it to me. Ah!
It was only after he fell that I felt the gun in my hand. I stared at it. And then I dropped it. I sat watching the red stain on Griffo's shirt. I don't know how long I sat there. Suddenly there was a knock on the door. I stood, but I couldn't walk. Then the door opened. A man came in. Big man with a hawk-like face. It was only when he closed the door, I noticed he held a gun. He looked at Griffo, at me. Then he put away his gun.
I see you beat me to the punch, Miss Adams.
Who are you?
I'm Strecker, Augie Strecker. Oh, you poor kid. Guess you never killed anybody before, did you? Well, you did a good job. You know, I want to thank you.
Thank me?
Yeah. For Griffo here. He saved me the bother.
I didn't mean to kill him.
No? He's dead.
I was fighting with him. The gun went off.
I see. Look, I know a little about murder. Better make up a better story. That one will sound phony to a jury.
A jury?
Sure. They try you for shooting people. Remember? Now, this thing looks bad. You invite a man up to your room, someone you think had something to do with your brother.
How did you know that?
Well, it's my business to know everything. Anyway, as I was telling you, you're up here with a guy you think can help you. You threaten him with a gun. He doesn't talk. You kill him. Yeah. Looks bad.
That isn't what happened.
Sure, I know. But who's going to believe you?
What should I do?
Well, you did me a favor knocking him off. I'll help you get rid of the body and get you out of town.
No, but shouldn't I report this?
Okay. Do it your way. So long.
Wait.
What do you want?
Help me. Help me get rid of him. I packed my suitcases and carried them down to Griffo's car. I brought back a lap robe. Then I returned to the car and sat in the front seat. Soon I saw Strecker in the vestibule, carrying a dark bundle. He came out hurriedly, crossed the sidewalk, and opened the rear door of the car. He put the body in. The legs dangled, and he tucked them in
covered Griffo with the robe and leaned the suitcases against her. Slammed the door shut. Got in alongside of me. And we drove off.
You come from Hillsborough, don't you?
Yes.
I'll drive you to the Westbridge station. We just about make the 923.
What are you going to do with Griffo?
Oh, don't worry about that. I always take good care of anybody who tries to double-cross me. Oh, by the way, Miss Adams, I'm buying you a one-way ticket to your hometown. Understand?
Yes.
Good. Something tells me you've got a lot more sense than poor Griffo.
Strecker handled the wheel with a reckless disregard of traffic lights and a contempt for other drivers. There was one moment when I thought the car would overturn. It was at the railway crossing when we swerved to avoid hitting the gateman. When we reached the station, Strecker stopped the car, well out of the range of the lights there. And he got out.
You wait here, I'll get your ticket.
All right. Please hurry back.
Okay. Take it easy.
He glanced in the rear of the car and then walked to the station. I felt like jumping out of the car and running. But I remembered what Stricker had said. And the way he looked when he said it. Then I heard footsteps approaching. I was glad to hear them. They stopped at the car and I looked up.
Hello, Miss Adams.
It was Lieutenant Calvin. He was standing there with his hand on the window watching me. And he looked into the rear of the car.
Leaving town?
Yes.
Kind of sudden, isn't it?
I guess so.
You know, I went over to your house to see you. From what I saw there, I gathered you were leaving us.
I didn't have much time to pack. I wanted to make the train.
I see. I figured you'd be taking this one. I tore out here in a prowl car to catch you. Just about made it, didn't I?
Yes. What do you want?
Well, it's about your brother.
My brother?
Yeah. Remember that report I mentioned about his having been seen in Mexico? Well, they checked on it, and it's not true. Just one of those things.
Oh.
What's the matter? I thought I'd be in for at least a strong I told you so.
No. As a matter of fact, Lieutenant, I've decided that you were right.
You have?
Yes, I guess I've just been foolish about things. And that's why I'm going home.
I'm sorry you're leaving.
Anything wrong, Miss Adams?
What? No, Mr. Strecker, not at all.
Hello, Augie.
Hello.
I didn't expect to find you here.
No? Here's your ticket, Miss Adams.
Thank you.
Is there anything you wanted, Lieutenant?
No, Augie. Not right now.
And suppose you leave us alone.
Okay. I'll be seeing you. Oh, and maybe you too, Miss Adams. So long.
Calvin began walking away. And then he stopped. He looked at the rear of the car and started to walk back.
Strecker.
Yeah?
Your taillight is out. If I were you, I'd have it fixed. I wouldn't want to have to pull you in, you know.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
From a distance, I finally heard Lieutenant Calvin drive off. I was still shaking. It was the sound of the train arriving that steadied me a little. Strecker got my suitcases out of the car.
Well, Miss Adams, I guess you better get moving.
May I have my bags, please?
Don't you want me to carry them for you?
No, thanks. I'd rather not.
Okay. Goodbye, Miss Adams.
I didn't answer him. I just took my suitcases and walked to the train. I could feel Strecker's eyes watching me until I got on. I I found a seat next to a woman. It was on the side facing the station. I kept my head down till the train started. Then I looked out of the window. The car was gone. Are you feeling all right, miss? What? I said, are you all right? You know, you look kind of shaky.
No, I'm fine. I'm just a bit tired.
Oh, gone far?
Hillsboro.
I hear that's a nice little town.
Yes, it's nice.
I like small towns. It's much better than living in the city, I always say. It's more neighborly. Don't you think so?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Oh, that's all right. I know how it is. Sometimes a person doesn't feel like saying a word. Perhaps you'd like to read. Wait, I have a book. Here it is.
Don't bother.
Oh, nonsense. It's no bother. Go ahead, take it. It's awfully interesting. It's about a murder. What? Why, what's the matter? Where are you going?
I got up and walked unsteadily down the car. The wheels of the train must have been listening to what that woman said, because they repeated it.
A murder.
I couldn't breathe. And suddenly the wheels screamed. The train shuddered and flung me to the floor. My head hit the top of the seat. I was lost in darkness. When I opened my eyes, I had to close them again. The light was too bright. And I thought I'd seen a face very close. A face which didn't belong there. I waited a while, and then I slowly opened my eyes again. A man was bending over me. It was Lieutenant Calvin.
Take it easy, Miss Adams.
Where am I?
In a hospital. But don't worry. The doctors assure me you're all right. You may have a bump where you struck your head, but it's nothing serious.
The train. Well, what happened?
Well, there was a collision. You were knocked unconscious and brought back here.
I can't stay here. I've got to leave town right away.
I'm afraid that's impossible for the time being.
Why? You said yourself I was all right.
Oh, it's not that, Miss Adams. You see, the train you were on collided with a car.
A car?
Yeah. A car driven by Strucker.
Strucker? He couldn't have disposed of Griffo's body. There wasn't time. Calvin was staring at me with his cold eyes.
You see, Miss Adams, on his way back from the station where the road cuts across the tracks, Strucker tried to beat the train to the crossing. He lost. Tell me, do you feel well enough to get out of bed and get dressed?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be waiting for you outside in the corridor.
It didn't take me very long, considering everything. When I came out into the hall, I guess I swayed a little. Lieutenant Calvin reached out to take my arm, but I shook him off. Well, where do we go from here? To headquarters?
No, we won't have to go that far. You just have to cross the hall into that room. Friend of yours is in there.
I walked slowly to the door and opened it. There was a screen around the bed. I entered the room, closed the door. It seemed years before I walked behind that screen.
What do you say, baby?
Griffo!
Yeah, it's me in person. I'm a hard guy to kill, ain't I? Now look, baby, I haven't much time. I want you to listen.
Yes?
Up in your room. I was talking to you about your brother.
Yes?
Strecker had him bumped off. Augie had Roxy Haver get in touch with him. She played it. She was a stoolie with info to sell. I told him to keep it quiet. Your brother was a sucker for it. He's in the river, near the bridge.
Did you tell this to the police?
No. But don't worry, baby, they're listening now.
He made a gesture with his head, and I saw the wire along the wall. There was a listening device in the room.
I don't care this time.
Is Strecker dead?
Yeah. He always was a lousy driver. I told him to let me take the wheel.
But how could you? With that bullet in you.
Bullet? That's good. That's a hot one. I thought you were wise by now.
Wise?
Yeah. It's like the Green Coop and that subway job. You see, up in your room, we gave a performance. Blank cartridge and a red stain. To bluff a sucker out of the game. But you know, baby, sometimes a sucker wins.
And so closes tonight's story, Sometimes a Sucker Wins. James Erthine wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Joan Tompkins played the part of Joan. The cast included Sidney Smith, Larry Haynes, Arthur Vinton, Cameron Purdum, and Anne Loring. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. This is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good, we have the very intriguing story of a fish that told a story of murder. It's called Fish for Entree. In the meantime? Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To listen to our original storytelling podcasts and for all things suspense, horror, and weird, check out CrypticCountyPodcasts.com, where you'll find shows like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and Odd Trails, a true paranormal podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story...
That's what ought to happen next.
It did.